Andy Herman. Andy Herman. That's right. It's Victory Monday. Talking football with Andy Herman. Andy, how the hell are you, buddy?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. Thanks so much for having me on. One of my favorite parts of the week. So can't wait to talk Packers with you.
Yeah, I mean, come on now. When you have a dominating, soul-crushing win over the Chicago Bears, what is there not to love? Now, I know
What did A.J. Dillon and Jordan Love do, Aaron?
I don't know. Apparently nothing, and the Packers don't know what they're doing, clearly. And, you know, they should have taken a wide receiver. But we're going to have to soldier on and the fact that they didn't and just deal with the complete domination. Now, I know there will be some naysayers out there and nitpickers who will point to the garbage time touchdowns the Bears got, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that. We're going to eat dessert first, though, because that's how we roll here on Let's Talk Football. First up, a lot of talk coming out of this game, both from Rodgers and LaFleur, about the plan, the offensive plan. What did you see from the Packers in regards to how they deployed all of their weapons? Because that was the thing last night. They talked about distributing it was lightning to all his button men. Rodgers was all over the yard with some of these throws to pretty much anybody. MVS has been like up on the stat sheet every week, except last night when they totally didn't need him, apparently.
No, for sure. And I thought they did just a variety of things really well. So I think one of the things that Matt LaFleur really does well that, you know, he should get credit for is just simply attacking opponents' weaknesses. And when Akeem Hicks isn't in the game, let's start by attacking that. And that's exactly what they did first and foremost. I think they ran more up the middle than I've seen them, at least run up the middle with success, better than I have in some level of time. And I think when Akeem Hicks is not in there, that's the first thing that you should try. And sometimes the easiest, most simple thing is the thing that you should try first. And give Matt LaFleur credit for doing that. And he didn't shy away from it, even on some third and short situations.
Especially after down in Tampa, after Vita Vea goes out the week before, and they didn't do that.
True.
Like, it's good to see him learning.
Yeah, great point. And then I think the other thing too is just, you know, they went back to a ton of jet motion. A lot of it was fake jet motion, but right. It helped them gain some leverage, you know, battles up front on the front lines. And I think they did a great job of that. And then using play action off of some of their running game, which things that we've seen all season long. But what it did is it took this attacking physical Bears defense that did not want to think, that wanted to flow downhill, run to the football and hit people. And it made them just a little bit off-centered, and it made them have to think a little bit more. And I thought that was really well done. And you could see that Chicago was never comfortable and never in an attack mode on defense.
It's funny because you mentioned the motion, and a lot of it was fake or eye candy, but yeah. You're right. It plays with your keys as a linebacker, as a safety, plays with your responsibilities, etc. It was funny though, because like, I'm sure your mentions are the same way. As soon as Tyler Irvin is out, who's going to run the motion? Like, my Twitter feed just becomes that question over and over again. And it was great last night watching how it really was by committee.
Yep.
Everyone did it, whether it was Davante Adams, whether it was EQ, whether it was Lazard. And I love, there was that one particular play where they ran Lazard across the formation and then back across the formation again, and then threw it to him in the flat, you know, where you can utilize and get, because obviously that's predicated on, okay, the Bears are going to drop a bunch of guys into coverage. That leaves everything wide open underneath. Rodgers takes an easy completion, and they got like 7-8 yards off of that. So, yeah, I'm with you. I thought the plan was obviously a smart one. And the thing, you mentioned running it in the A-gap, basically, I mean, between the tackles, and you're right. I think they did it more with more success than we've seen it in a long time. I do wonder, it is funny, because you did mention they stuck with it. Because it was successful early. I wonder how much they would have stuck with it had it not been successful early. Because LaFleur and Rodgers have kind of shown before that if it doesn't kind of uncork itself early on in ball games, they have a real problem sticking with it.
Well, a lot of the outside stuff didn't always work, and they stuck with that last night. So
that's true. Fair point.
In some capacity, but I think they would have, you know, kept it going, especially with, you know, the lead that they had in scoring. Now, maybe had they not, and maybe had it been a closer game, then yeah, you know, there's a variety of variables at play there. But I think that they had a pretty good idea that they were going to be able to run inside, and I think they would have stuck to it to some extent.
Yeah, I tend to agree there. What did you think basically about Jones and Williams? I mean, you look at this 1-2 punch the Packers have. Obviously, it helps to get Jones going. We've talked about that here for many weeks now because he hasn't been.
Yeah.
And then once he kind of is, you know, let loose, everything opens up in this offense. And that's not to take away from anything Jamal Williams adds, because we obviously saw his tough running yet again last night, saw what he meant on that touchdown that he scored. I mean, that's vintage Jamal up the middle there, just powering through those last couple guys. But Aaron Jones, it's like when he is on and a major part of the offense, whether it's running between the tackles, catching it in a swing pass, whether he's designed to get downfield in the passing game, everything opens up. It's so kind of eerie how it's not easy. Obviously, nothing is in the NFL, but it is that simple as far as this offense goes.
Yeah, and I mean, with Aaron Jones, like you said, it's not only his ability to, you know, run between the tackles, but his ability to get out wide. And then the guy has way more power than you would expect him to have when you, yes, you know, look at him at first glance, and being able to power through runs and finish strong. The player that's really at the biggest disadvantage is Jamal Williams, simply because by comparison, right, you're left always wanting more Aaron Jones, even when Jamal Williams has a good game. Aaron is just that good that you just want to see the ball in his hands as much as possible. I do ultimately think Green Bay is doing the right thing and trying to, you know, not give him a ton of carries throughout the season, keeping him fresh. You know, and I would like to see him more in games where maybe they're struggling to get things going and just, you know, feed Aaron Jones in those games.
Right. When things are in balance, you would like them to lean on Jones. I totally agree there. And I think that really popped up last week against the Colts, where we had big stretches of Jamal. And again, it's not to take anything away from Jamal, but especially in the second half, when you're struggling to move the ball, like, get Aaron in there. Like, he seems to have a way of getting things going. What did you think once we saw Corey Linsley go down? Obviously, they go right back to that, you know, the line that they had the week prior when Elton had to kick in. I mean, we all know we've sung Elton Jenkins' praises so much. There's really not much left to say. Right. I mean, you look at Runyon and the job he's done stepping in at left guard. It hasn't been flawless by any stretch of the imagination, but golly, what a find by the Packers on day three of the draft.
Yeah, there's a real world where John Runyon could end up being the best draft pick from this class.
It's crazy, right?
That's not to take away from anything else. Right. He's playing well already. And like you said, has it been perfect or flawless? No chance. But is he well ahead of the curve as just a rookie guard? I don't care if he was drafted in the first, right, seventh, undrafted, just a, yep, rookie guard. He is well ahead of the curve. And then when you factor in where the Green Bay Packers were able to select him, you know, sixth round later in the draft, just an incredible find. And I think Green Bay has to be thrilled. Another player who has positional versatility. He's played left and right guard already. I have a feeling in a pinch he could play some right tackle.
Well, I agree, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, so I just think that adds so much value. And you know, again, Green Bay is down at some point yesterday, Corey Linsley and then Lucas Patrick, and of course, Lane Taylor as well, if you go back to begin the season. Yep. And they still have five starting caliber offensive linemen out there. And that's when they signed Rick Wagner, I was adamant and wrong in my judgment that he was going to be the starting right tackle and Billy Turner was going to be a guard. And that was all there was to it.
Right.
But I legitimately think that they understood the value of just overall depth along the offensive line. And that is not something Ted Thompson did a lot of great things, having like strong depth along the offensive line and having 2-3 guys that could always step in and be ready to play. That has not always been the case. I thought Gutekunst did a great job in picking up Jared Valdir late last year to give them that guy. And then not looking the other way when Valdir left this year, just, you know, decided not to play this year, whatever happened, to go out and get a Rick Wagner and have that depth as well. And really, you know, bring back Lane Taylor on a minimum deal. Also, I just think those were really, really shrewd moves to secure the depth of this team. And then when you spend 3 6th round picks on the same position, it goes back to when you spend it on Jama Moore, MBS, EQ, you're trying to get one. When you do Adams, Jamal Williams, and Devontae Mays, you're trying to get one. Same thing at guard. They got one, it seems, at least in Runyon. And Matt LaFleur was pretty glowing in his comments with Simon Stepaniak from his first impressions well last week. So,
right. Well, that's funny you say that about Ted, because, you know, there's no question. I think the images are burned in Packers fans' brains of, like, you know, Bulaga going down and Jason Spriggs having to step in. And that was a tire fire. Every single time you got into third and long, you knew Spriggs was getting beat, so Rodgers better get the ball out of his hands. And you look at the different, I mean, just the sheer number of different combinations they've had to play along the offensive line. Obviously, that's a major testament to the depth that Gutekunst has built, but it's also, you know, a shout out to Stenovich,
who,
year on the job. I mean, the guy has never been an O-line coach in the league until last year, and they have been absolutely seamless up front. And yeah, the depth coupled with the coaching, it's been damn impressive.
And I would argue too that if in my opinion, the biggest difference between the offense last year and this year, I know the scheme in its second year and things like that, but the difference in the offensive line, I just think they've even been that much better this year. To me, that's the biggest difference just in pure play out on the field.
Yeah, I would agree there. Let's flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. obviously opportunistic against a struggling young quarterback last night. That has kind of been, hopefully, you know, a bit of their MO going back to even when Capers was in town, but yep. Pettine as well. You know, they know they're going to get some balls thrown up to them. Got to take advantage of those opportunities. What did you think of Darnell Savage overall last night? Because you see the two interceptions, you know, you could argue, okay, they were thrown to them. Although I think that first play is a really heady play by Savage, because he is facing the exact opposite way, flips his hips and gets behind the receiver. That's a really heady play and a good play. But overall, I thought he had a really good game.
I love what Darnell Savage has been doing these last handful of games. And while I think there's been a lot of issues with the defense overall in the course of the last handful of weeks, one thing that they seem to figure out is I really feel like they figured out the right roles for Adrian Amos and Darnell Savage over the course of the last couple of weeks. And they're still doing some of the stuff that they've been doing earlier in the season and kind of switching them up from time to time. But I really think that they found, you know, really strong spots for both of those guys and figured out what they want them to be doing. Darnell Savage has shown that he can play all over the field. They're letting him use his instincts and his playmaking ability more. And I talked about this on YouTube this morning. I think it's really funny because people last year were like, oh, you know, Darnell Savage is great. He's going to be this really great player. And all the signs were there, but he struggled in major ways last year. And I was kind of the one pumping the brakes. And then this year, everyone was saying, oh, Darnell Savage is
a bust, right?
And I'm like the exact opposite. I'm like, whoa. Like, he's a lot of times he's in the right place at the right time. He's not making negative plays. He's not missing tackles. He's not taking poor angles. We've seen a little bit of it here and there, but by far and away, it's been so much better. And this was, to me, these last few weeks, this is the game that was coming, and some of these opportunities were coming. And I think this really paid off his really strong work over the course of the last month or so.
Yeah, I definitely think last week and last night were his two best games of the year so far. There's no question there. Somebody who is kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum, at least to my eyes, and I'd love to get your take on it, is Christian Kirksey. I mean, you keep waiting, and I've tried to be patient. But man, it's just week after week, it seems like he's a step slow. He's not very strong at the point where he's supposed to be bringing a ball carrier down. Instead, we see him get taken for rides. You know, I liked his tape in Cleveland prior to the injuries. But I tell you what, I'm starting to think those injuries have robbed him of the explosiveness and the playmaking ability that I saw on that tape.
Man, his first step quickness just seems to be completely gone. Like you said, he's a step slow. It looks like he's running in mud at times. I do think there were a couple plays on tape a couple weeks ago where, for the first time in a long time, I felt like I saw a linebacker stack an offensive lineman, shed him, and go make a play. He still has some of that physicality at the point of attack, but it seemed to completely disappear this week. He's 1A, literally 1A on my list of people that I really want to go back and watch in this game, because I thought at first glance, I thought he was close to abysmal. And again, that's not watching him directly. So right.
That's the eye test of the flow of the game. But exactly. Like, if you keep popping up that way, it's like, it is somewhat telling.
For sure.
You don't want to make any sweeping proclamations, but it's like, man, every time my eye drifts towards him, it's because he looks slow, or he's out of position, or he's missing a tackle, or he's just making a tackle and getting taken for a ride. Running back, you know,
it was in all phases. You know, he struggled in coverage. He struggled at the point of attack. He struggled getting from point A to point B. Like, there was enough just at first glance where you're like, okay, that this is a potential problem. And like I said, I'm really intrigued to go back and look at that when the all 22 goes out.
Yeah. And it's hard because you want to say, okay, well, play Kamal Martin. But then of course, Martin goes down in special teams with an injury last night. And you got to think they were trying to work Kamal back from whatever the prior injuries were. So, you know, you don't want Ty Summers out there. So eventually it's like, you got to live with Kirksey. So I think, you know, hopefully he can, at least maybe not, I don't think he's ever going to regain that explosiveness that I was talking about, but I do think he can be a little bit more, assignment sure, step ahead, fewer false steps, etc. I mean, we'll see how that plays out for the remainder of the year. Looking at the pass rush, it was funny. I don't know what you thought watching live. I had to admonish someone on our live chat because someone said, oh, you know, the pass rush isn't doing anything. This is at the end of the game. And I was like, wait a second. The pass rush is literally responsible for 7 points, along with, you know, I thought they got after Trubisky pretty damn well with only 4 guys. Now, were there some clean pockets? Yep, no doubt. But I thought the guys maybe not came to life, but I think they were harassing the pocket without maybe getting the quarterback to the ground with regularity. I thought the pass rush was pretty on point last night.
this will be another one I'm interested to look back on, because in a way, I almost leaned towards your listener in the second half. I thought the first half they were getting after, and obviously the forced fumble being responsible for 7 points. And
when the game was in the balance, yeah, that, right, exactly.
And that's the great. That's a great point. I was actually just talking to Marcus Eversole about this as well. When the game was in the balance, this game was 41-10 at the end of the third quarter. Yep. And not only was it 41-10, the defense allowed 10 points, but they scored 7. That's a net 3 points for the defense when this game was on the line. So whatever happened in the fourth quarter, yes, it happened. And honestly, I'm sure the coaching staff in a way was excited about it, because when the game was in balance, they played great. And now they have something to talk about and coach on for the rest of this week. So it's one of those things you can certainly live with. But I did think in the second half, the reason why I say in the second half is, there was no threat of Chicago running the football in any way, shape,
right, or form. So
you would think that at some point with a 4-man rush and really for the most part, what's a pretty porous Chicago Bears offensive line.
Right.
I would have liked to have seen a bit more pressure on Mitch Trubisky. That said, there was a lot of quick passes. Green Bay was playing off and you know, those things have to work hand in hand, but yeah. In the second half, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more, but again, it's going to be if Kirksey's 1A, then pass rush is 1B on my list of going back to look at.
Well, it's funny you mentioned like they're playing off or whatever, because it's like it's all situational. They are just keeping everything in front of them, and they are allowing those quick passes. But it is the one thing I did notice in the second half, especially in the fourth quarter, it's so like predictable. This defense, if they are all their frontline guys are playing, they communicate well and they pretty much execute the scheme, maybe not flawlessly, but you down in and down out, they do a pretty damn good job. But the moment one guy gets dinged up and they have to start like changing personnel as far as, okay, you're the nickel and you're the diamond. Okay. You're the back, you're the, you know, the free safety and whatever, everything just goes to hell. Like they short circuit. You saw both of the last two touchdowns they gave up. They're running around like chickens with their head cut off, like yelling at each other, trying to get into place as Chicago is snapping the ball. Like that just seemed to be a common theme. And that has been a common theme where there just seems to be so much specialization in the scheme. And we saw this last year when Savage went out for an extended number of weeks. All of a sudden, it was just like trying to mix and match, and they couldn't make it. And Raven Green went down. So all of a sudden, they had all these kind of ins and outs, and the communication just falls apart. And I think that really reared its head last night.
And then it's one thing too. Like I'm the first to say, you know what? There's millionaires on the other side of the field too, and they get paid to make big plays, but make them earn it. And when you have on that one touchdown, you know, Chandon Sullivan, while the play's going on, is pointing to Christian Kirksey to take the crosser, and then Kirksey's, you know, backing up, and then everyone's doing the old Packer, you know, defensive backhand in the air, you know, sort of thing. What's happening? That's an issue. And then on the screen to the side where there's four players on the side, there's three defenders and they're all waving somebody else to come over. And I don't know if it was, but, you know, they're asking for somebody else to come over. Those type of communication breakdowns, are what you don't want to see. And again, it's great coaching stuff for this week, but we're also in week 12 at this point.
Well, that's the concerning thing. It's right. I understand that. You know, not everyone gets a ton of reps with the ones. Not everybody gets a ton of reps, period, during practice. But you are in week 12, and you are a professional. Yeah. So I got to think, if there's the call, whatever the call is, you should know your responsibilities when, however they set up, you should know, okay, well, here I am. There shouldn't be a gaggle of guys on the outside going, we need one more. That one more needs to know his assignment. In week 12 of a professional
football. First play was, you know, Kirksey and Chandon Sullivan. It's not like it was Kennard Hallman and Stanford Samuels, you know, mixing things up. It was two players who were out there on almost every single play. You know, that's the stuff that's concerning. And while it's garbage time and stuff like that, like I said, make them earn it and make them go down the field and stuff like that. Don't make your own mistakes and give up touchdowns.
What did you think? I think we saw some actual positive developments from special teams last night. They actually covered. I thought, you know, going into this game, Cordell Patterson was going to be a real issue. He never was. I thought they did a pretty darn good job of negating that threat.
Yeah, I thought they did a good job in coverage. I thought J.K. Scott, he only punted, what, once? Maybe once or twice? But
Twice, I believe.
A couple of good hang time punts, and they were right down there to cover those. It was the bizarro special teams game. The only thing that went wrong was Mason Crosby.
Mason Crosby, exactly.
The exact opposite of normal. So, and it was obviously just one missed extra point, which, you know, no big deal. No harm.
We'll blame that on the operation. That's something they can work on all week.
Yeah, exactly. We'll still blame J.K. Scott for it.
It's obviously J.K.'s fault. There you go. I'm joined by Andy Herman, as I am each and every week after the game. We like to talk football. It's what we do. Andy, I can't thank you enough.
Hey, can't wait till next Monday. Have a great weekend.
You too, buddy.